I want to go back to 1992 and 3 when basically Skunk Owl formed from a band called Skunk, which was made up of Dean Sutherland and his brother Michael and Warwick on guitar. And then yourself and Aya came along. How did this all happen? How did you all meet and form into Skunk Owl?
It's kind of weird. I think the scene back then, if you're into funk music or jazz, you pretty much saw the same people everywhere. And if, especially down the Harbourside Brasserie, Jackie Ozowski, that was the, and the Godmothers, that was the place to be. You know what I mean? You'd be anywhere, anyone do a gig and everyone would be there to see the Godmothers play. So, or up the Tom Tom Club, that was a really good place to see a lot of funk and rock. And I was mates with a band called Juice.
Yes.
I grew up with them, went to high school. So we had, and King Clam, Ben Fink, who's all will be there, you know, on the night.
Cool.
Singing backups. And he's played all manner of things from, you know, the Whitlams to Lior and bands like that. And he had his funk band, King Clam. And
so it was a real real scene back then.
There was the Funk Inc. parties, which Peter Glass would be playing on the night. And we were all just going to these warehouse parties. It was just funk, you know. Bar, where Good Bar is now, the Freezer. And then, AS saw that I was into it. We'd put on a few club nights. And then he knew Mike from high school, from way back, from the North Shore. He grew up with my dad. And so they just said they'd seen him around and that they needed a singer because they had Al Code Blue from Sound Unlimited Posse, Australia's first signed hip-hop group.
That's it.
He was doing their emceeing and he had to leave to go overseas. So it was always this kind of, you know, semi-temporary jam.
Yeah.
And AS invited me and said, you know, I'm doing my first gig with these guys. And they were with Al. And I saw it and I was just loved it. And I could see because I'd been rhyming in the bedroom, just woodshedding for about 2 years, a year and a half, not telling anybody really, you know, and just really working on it.
Yep.
And still pretty crap, you know, all right. But when I listened to that early stuff, I'm like, yeah. But so it was the brothers, like, there's the Sutherland brothers are in, you know, drums and bass. And then, so then Aya went, well, my brother can rhyme. I've heard him rhyme. I'd helped him try and write a few things for his own stuff. And it just worked. They gave me the tape, you know, and they loved it. And it, just worked.
Fantastic. And Skunk Owl was
born.
Gave
me the tape.
The tape, of course. The demo tape.
Yeah.
Now, like you're saying, it's such a great scene back then. And really, Australia does have a great history of funk, jazz, ska sort of stuff. But you brought along that rap vocal, which, you know, was just a unique thing. Like you say, Unlimited Posse was one of the first hip-hop groups that I remember as well.
Yeah.
But what you did, you came in with that sort of Australian rap vocal.
Yeah, well, I was a bit of a inner-city hippie as well. Like, I was a greenie and bit of a lefty and blah, blah, blah. And I just felt it was disingenuous to try. And, like, I had long hair, wore weird stuff. I painted my own clothes. And I was like,
oh, you did?
I'm not going to change that. Yep. Like, why pretend? Why shave my hair, put on caps and put on, you know? I'm from Bronny. I was born in Sydney. You know what I mean? Like, I've got, and I may as well just speak my truth.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm going to do it and if I'm going to be able to handle, and I got a lot of crap, you know, from the hip hop.
What was the response like to that?
Yeah, well, we never got accepted and I never get, you know, and respect from the hip hop scene, but that's okay because I was a bit up you too, you know, like I don't want to be a part of it because I find it too, you know, derivative, you know, and not, I think now it's, you know, finally hit its.
Well, yeah, it's
only really in the last 5 years, I reckon, is there some originality and diversity in hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really close scene. Same with the jazz scene. And we were like, we don't want to be a straight funk band because we grew up on pub rock and Oz rock. And like Mike had played in, you know, punk bands, punks like rockabilly. And Dino loves, you know, his heavy kind of Fishbone and that style stuff, you know, and Les Claypool, all that kind of, you know, plus his funk. And so we're like, let's just put it all in, you know, like, let's just try and find a way to make all these sounds fit and be original and not, you know, kind of follow. We didn't want to follow anyone.
And you certainly didn't. And I think it hit the scene, especially with Feed, I guess everyone sort of took a lot more notice. But I think your debut album was a lot more funky, a lot more, you know, really. The music was the basis of it.
And we had the horns.
Are you going to have some horns there on Saturday night?
Yeah, we've got the horn section. We've been using them for the last few years. Mm-hmm. But at the time, when you're starting out, you know, we have backups, you know, percussion sometimes. But then when you get a bit of success or, you know, and you start getting gigs out, you know, in Adelaide and you're in cars and it's like, that's a big band and a lot of money to kind of cart around. Mm. Plus the sound in the second album changed. We wanted to change.
Yep.
That's that thing of not wanting to stay the same and not wanting to always, you know. rely on any kind of success you've had or, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to keep changing.
Yeah, so we wanted to get a bit harder and rockier. And we also knew that it's an easier way to get radio play.
Yes.
We're struggling to get radio play. Like Triple J was the only one, and 2SER and, you know, place an indie Sydney, you know, or Triple R Melbourne were the only ones kind of to pick it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you get signed, record company want kind of more, but plus we want that, you know, and let's try something different. So that's why we kind of got a bit heavier and darker.
Okay. Though, so. Yeah, right. Well, I'm going to just quickly play a song from the debut album. Tell us about this one. It's Cow and a Pig.
If anyone read the thing, it's a track listing. There's a lot of animal references. There's echidna, sheep, cow and a pig, because they were the jam names. When the band were jamming them out, they just decided to give more animal names.
Okay.
So they knew what they were talking about. And me and A kind of, when we got into it and were starting writing lyrics, we kind of liked that.
Yep.
So we tried to keep some of that and use them. And so this is A's, you know, men are pigs and women are cows.
Right.
And we've got to come together like a cow and a pig. And, you know, we're lucky enough to score Chris Abrahams, who's from the Mighty Necks. He's, you know, one of Australia's most incredible musicians, you know, full stop.
Yep.
A pianist. And he was playing with the Godmothers. He'd seen us. He liked us. He heard our tapes and went, they're really nice. I like the song structure. I'm happy to play in it.
You know? Yeah, right.
So he came in and smashed it in a day, every track.
Wow.
Just went, and this is him on a grand piano. And that's why, this is a good indication of where we're trying to be different as a band.
Yep. Yeah. Well, here we go. Cow and a Pig from Skunk Hour. Enjoy this. That bass. Oh, what a track. A Cow and a Pig from Skunk Hour right there. And we're just chatting off there. We've got Del Larkin in the studio, by the way, here in 2SER. We are chatting about Skunk Hour and the debut album and the fact that they're playing at the Metro this Saturday night in full, the whole first album. A Cow and a Pig, it's got so much going on in that track.
Yeah.
You know, like you're saying.
Yeah, it's dense.
Tell us who's in it.
Well, Chris Abrahams on piano. That's the main thing. Like when he started playing that riff, it was like we got something here. And then a mate, Damon, now I can't remember his surname, but he played with a lot of the funk, you know, groups in town. He's on percussion. And then my wife,
your wife plays on the track. Yeah, nice.
With Lorna, Lorna Clarks, I can't remember her name, so that's really bad.
It's all right,
time gets away from you.
Me
and my wife, we're still together.
Nice. And she'll be on stage on Saturday night?
Yeah, she'll be there with Ben Fink. Yeah.
Very cool.
Doing backups. So, looking forward to it. But I just like that song. I've always loved that song.
Yeah. It's got such a great vibe.
Yeah.
Real upbeat sort of. And that
with that stomping break bass. And just with the nice grand piano and the horns. And then, you know, it's good.
So we're also talking off air a little bit about the time. 1993, look. While I was listening to Skunk Hour on, you know, one album, I'd be listening to Nirvana or Soundgarden or Rage Against the Machine on the other, you know. And it was that time of grunge. It was getting massive. Like, it was seriously huge. And I'm sure that Australian music, you know, radio stations in the industry were all looking for the next big grunge band from Australia, you know.
Yeah.
And how does Skunk Hour fit into that? You know, how would you get the notice of them to actually want to listen to?
It was really hard without Triple J and the support. Like, you know, as an Andy Glitcher had the Groove Train and
that's right.
And acid jazz though was big and funk it kind of hit. So there was enough of an audience, a small audience in every city we went to, to get into it. The country town thing's a whole nother matter, and also media and press. Like the press. Print media are almost impossible to get anyone to notice. Even when we were outselling a lot of the bands, they were fawning over and getting more at our gigs. And, you know, but they just didn't want to bar it. They didn't want to, you know.
Yeah.
It was rock.
Yeah. Feeding the masses with what they wanted at the time. And, I guess
and rock was just so huge.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, when you look at that, well, actually, I love that about the period, like someone put up on Facebook, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but on the same day in 91, I guess it is. Have to be. Tribe Called Quest, The Low End Theory, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, the Chili Peppers, yep. and Nirvana Nevermind dropped it's on the true. Same day.
I think it's, I used to know the date, it's September something.
Or 1990.
It was 91.
Yeah, and that's just incredible. To drop on the same day, and they're all just like historic albums.
Definitely.
In my book.
I always look back at 1991 as pretty much the defining year for me. I was 15 years old, and all his music just came out of the blue, Nirvana, Nevermind, Bill, and I was just blown away. And
I guess we're also lucky enough to get the last vestiges of that great, from the 50s onwards, yep. of how important music was, and you had to buy music physically, you had to go to shops, you had to find it on radio, you had to swap tapes, you really had to work for your music, and it meant everything. Yep. And Nirvana and that kind of period, that was the last great movement to come along. And then it went to kind of dance music, and that's a great movement too. I'm right into it. I've been DJing for 25 years, and hip-hop, hip-hop kind of came at the same time. But hip-hop, to me, was already blossoming by then,
Yeah, yeah. It seems to have come full circle a bit now, and with vinyl something coming right back in, people are going back and buying vinyl records of the stuff they love. And I think that's fantastic that people are realizing that, you've got your digital music out there.
Yeah.
But if you're something you really love and as an artist you really want to support, you buy the physical CD and you have it at home and you own it.
Yeah.
That's so important. What about music nowadays? Like you say, you're saying you're DJing a bit, but what do you listen to? Like, if you tune in or you download an album, do you get a chance to sort of listen to any stuff?
Lately, I've been on a bit of there's Esperanza Spalding.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah.
Coming out, of course, for Vivid very soon.
But then, I'm pretty diverse like that. Aussie-wise, I love some of Zoo's.
Yes.
Stuff, to come out of Sydney. I thought that was really cool. I mean, it's like there's no one great act. I mean, Hiatus Kaiyote, they're...
Yeah, I thought you might appreciate them. They're amazing. Yeah.
Great. There's... who did I hear? Like Briggs and... What's their collaboration?
AB Original.
And it was sick. And it was just sick.
Trials, I think.
Rock-wise, I love Mama's Volta kind of stuff. My son's in hardcore bands, and he's a drummer. He plays a lot of that. So I like Turnstile and things like that. I've loved, but they're more underground. Yeah. Even what are the Nut Jobs? But I like
Yeah, right. Well, it's diverse.
I'm country.
That's the way to go.
I've been on a massive Prince binge though at the moment.
Who hasn't?
He is my absolute hero, and I've just been devastated. So I've just been just nothing but Prince. So it's hard to think of other artists. It's just been Prince.
Well, it's pretty crushing. I mean, I think I had Double J just on the repeat on weekend because Double J was just playing constantly Prince. And I loved it because it just played everything from old to new.
Yeah.
It's very sad when all these legends just start.
Yeah, him and Bowie, that just killed me. It just really did. Rock My World, those two of those going, because they're just so important, what they were trying to put out there, they represent.
Well, that's right. Well, fantastic that you could come in today and have a chat. I really appreciate it. I think Skunk Hour is one of those bands that endures, and the fact that you've got your original lineup, right, on Saturday night, that doesn't happen very often.
It is in a way, because we recorded that album without an official keyboardist.
Yes.
And then Paul Searles joined after for the next three. He needed the next three albums, but he wasn't on that album.
Yeah, yeah.
So technically, we've got Al Goodman from many things, Tracky Dax and Fame and Filthy Keyboarder,
Cool.
So we drop and then a few hits, and curveballs in the second set.
Curveballs?
Yeah, just like some rare things that people wouldn't have heard that were EP tracks. Fantastic.
Well, something for everyone Saturday night at the Metro Skunk. I still know every word to Sunstone. I'm gonna sing the crap out of that. Your rap on that bit,
it's probably my favorite. I'm most proud of that song. As a rhyme,
one of my faves. Well, thank you so much for coming down, Dill Larkin from Skunk Hour.
No worries, man, thanks for having us.
We'll play one more track of yours to take it out, and this one's a bit of a slower groove. Do You Like It, from last track on the album? What was this?
We put it last because it was the our kind of biggest song live.
Yeah.
It was always already a bit of an anthem live. It's about smoking hooch.
Yeah.
But it's about the good and the bad side of it.
Okay.
Funnily enough, this got banned. We did a video for it.
Oh, right.
And Video Hits refused to play it. Ooh. And I think ABC refused to play it even in mornings and blah, blah, blah. Okay. But they were playing Hits from the Bong.
What?
All Morning by Cypress Hill.
Yeah, right.
And they banned us. So we got pretty that kind of treatment. Like, all right, here we go again. You know?
Where's the video now? Can you see it online?
Yeah, it's all on YouTube. Yeah, okay. There's plenty. Yeah.
I have to go look for it. I can't remember how it goes now.
We're all up at a farm up in the Hunter Valley. We just had a huge weekend with about 50 people.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was great.